Hello and welcome to episode 134 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hi.
Hello.
Alrighty, so this week we have a hot topic for you. It is going to be for the new trailer for Get Out, Jordan Peele's new movie, and then we're going to move on to our main review, which is a review of The Girl on the Train. But first, hot topic time. Get Out. Who's introducing that one?
That'd be me. So I'm introducing Get Out, not because I know exceptionally more about it than my co-host, because we don't know a lot about it. We know that Jordan Peele from Key and Peele wrote and directed it, and the trailer came out today, so we know that it is about a interracial couple where the dude is like, I guess I'll go meet my white girlfriend's family, and then they get there and everything in this super, super white neighborhood up in the woods is fucked. And I'm super excited about this because he's been talking about this movie for years, and people, you know, are like, oh, well, you know, Key and Peele are comedy guys, blah, blah, blah. And like they made Keanu and we love Keanu. But if you watched their show, Jordan always had a tendency toward really dark content. Like there's stuff like there was like this really creepy kid whose like make-a-wish was to murder someone. And there was this really great sketch about vampires, and there was like another sketch about drugs. Like he has a really dark sense of humor. So when he said he was really into horror movies, I was like, that completely makes sense to me. And to watch this trailer, I'm really excited. I can't think of a horror movie I've seen that's this explicit about race relations. And he's a really smart guy when it comes to playing in social politics for stories. So I'm really excited to see how this looks.
Yeah, this thing came completely out of nowhere for me. I was aware that he was directing something, but I most certainly did not expect to see a horror movie like this. Like when it first brought up the topic of race in the trailer, I'm like, I don't know. That came across a little awkward. And then all of a sudden when it got into the situation, I kind of saw how he was approaching the topic, and wow, what a unique way to address that while including some fun horror tropes, but also some fun spins on the genre too. I don't know where he's going with this story, but I am so insanely intrigued right now.
I think that's one of the exciting things about it, that like I don't know where it's going either. Like and part of it is the race thing, because like there are just not that many horror movies I've seen that do deal with race in any explicit way. So it's kind of interesting just on that level. But also just like when I was watching the trailer, at first I was like, oh, you know, I get it. It's like a social satire thing. Okay. But then like the trailer just keeps twisting and twisting, gets weirder and weirder. And I was like, oh, I actually don't know what they're doing. My one fear is that maybe I'm worried that they might have given away too much in the trailer, but I can't tell. Since I can't really tell where the story's going, I guess I don't know for sure if that's the case. I hope not.
That crossed my mind too, especially because, you know, the typical thing that they do at an end of a horror trailer is they do that quick cutting thing where you think you're seeing the entire movie. And normally I would complain about things like that, but the way they do it here and the little snippets we get just make me want to know more, and pretty much have left me in like a complete zone of mystery where I have absolutely no clue what type of movie we're going to get, whether it's, you know, something not supernatural, but something like somewhat mystical, if it's a torture porn style thing, if it's a slasher thing. I don't know how to describe this right now.
Because like looking at it, it looks like Stepford Wives, but instead of them all being pretty blonde women, they're all basically like lobotomized slave people. And that's intense, and I'm real curious. And I was also excited because I want to point out that Keith Stanfield, who we know from like Short Term 12 and Dope.
And Atlanta on FX, he's like one of the best parts of it.
Oh, right. Mm. That's true. I've only seen the first episode of Atlanta. I'm a little behind because I've been traveling so much. But yeah, he's in it. And I was just really excited because I was like, oh, like, I'm just thrilled to see him get work because he's fascinating. He's so fun to watch.
But I've said before, he's like, I'm worried he's going to be like the male Judy Greer where he's in everything, but only for 5 minutes. And he's not in the show that much. So I'm like, I'm glad you have another job in Atlanta, Keith Stanfield.
And I just thought of something, which I can't believe I didn't think of earlier. So Jordan Peele actually eloped with Chelsea Peretti. So there's also like an undercurrent of meta-ness to the fact that like he is a black man who married a white lady. So there's also that. And you have the girl from Girls playing the white girl who is oblivious to the fact that her parents are apparently super weird about race stuff.
Do you think that his in-laws are going to go see this movie and be like, is that how he sees us? Oh, my God.
It's going to be an awkward Christmas. That's my guess. But yeah, this movie comes out in February. I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, I wish it were coming out this October because there's no horror movie I'm more excited about than this movie right now.
No horror movies this October. Sorry. Except Ouija.
Yeah,
That's
there's
it.
like Ouija and there's something else, but it looks so dumb I didn't even bother putting it on my list to see.
I think Ouija is the only big, wide horror
yeah.
release at this point because Rings moved to
right,
February, January, I don't know where. Yeah, it's a sad horror season. All right, well, moving on. We have our big review right now, and it is a review of The Girl on the Train. I am introducing that one. Here's the IMDb synopsis. A divorcee becomes entangled in a missing persons investigation that promises to send shockwaves throughout her life. I guess that's accurate, but it is also a terrible way to explain what is kind of a complicated movie. So the main character we start with, it's very difficult to describe this movie without spoiling certain things, I'll say first, but the movie opens with Emily Blunt, and she's on a train, and she takes the same train to and from Manhattan every single day, and that gives her the opportunity to look out the window and spy on a woman who she assumes has the best relationship in the world. So it's kind of like a grass is greener type of situation, and eventually you come to realize that she is kind of like a super heavy drinker. She got divorced from her husband and her behavior as a drunk was just like so, so terrible. She's responsible for doing these awful, awful things. And it kind of paints her as a really despicable person. And it introduces you to the woman that she's spying on, who's played by Haley Bennett. And also the new wife of her ex-husband, played by Rebecca Ferguson, who was completely unrecognizable in the movie. I did not realize that was blonde Rebecca Ferguson until the end credits, and I'm like, oh my god, that's kind of cool. But I liked this movie for the most part. I saw it with a big group of people. I think it was 8 of us in total, and to give you a sense of how we all felt, me and one other guy liked it. We didn't love it. We liked it. The rest of the group seemed a little, you know, disappointed, maybe even found it off-putting to a degree. I thought it was pretty well done. I don't understand how they could have told this story in any other way without making this a much longer movie. I thought the three lead actresses were all fantastic. Christy, stop laughing.
I'm just laughing because I feel like lately when we're like, Perry, you review the movie, you start off from such a you're like, I don't know what they're going to say, but I'm going to start from a defensive stance.
Yeah.
And then I feel like you just wait for Angie and I to be like, brah.
It's also how I've been primed since I've seen the movie, because the second you walk out of a screening, everyone starts chit-chatting about how they think the movie was, and I was definitely in the minority on this one, having liked it. And I think I liked it for the most part because I liked the three women. I thought they were great performances. And I did kind of like the way the director, Tate Taylor.
Tate Taylor.
Thank you.
He did The Help and he did... Did he also do Get On Up? Was that him?
Yeah, he did. He did. I did like the way he shot this movie. I think this is a movie where it's really important that you're inside the character's head. And I think he makes a couple of visual choices that really help get you there. The one glaring issue I had with the movie is I thought Justin Theroux was extremely miscast. And there's certain moments in the movie that are unintentionably laughable for that reason. And the same is true with a couple of other moments. There's one where I couldn't help myself. It's where Emily Blunt's running away from the house.
Where she runs away. Oh my god. I'm so glad you said that. It looks crazy. We'll get to that later.
I laughed out loud. All right, I'll let you guys jump in here before I spiral out of control.
Andrew, you go ahead and take it.
I mean, I didn't like it as much as Perry, but I did not hate it as much as as Christy. Which I already know because Christy and I were at the same screening and we talked about it right after. I guess basically, I was talking to our other friend Rebecca right after the screening, and basically the description we came up with is this movie thinks it's Gone Girl, but it's actually a less self-aware boy next door. Like, it thinks that it's really smart, it thinks it's trying to make a point, but it's like, really, you're like a cheesy thriller, like, you know, you have no business thinking you're making a grand statement about, like, I don't know, women or feminism or whatever the fuck this movie thinks it's doing. And, like, you know the movie's trying because it ends with, like, them being like, sisterhood?
Yeah.
And you're just like,
it's so in-your-face sisterhood. It makes so little sense.
But, like, and as for the performances, like, I thought Emily Blunt was pretty good. I think that she is kind of hindered by the fact that the script has her doing some things that are just kind of like bonkers and not in necessarily a good way, in a way where you're just like, I mean, I don't think that was necessarily a great moment for her, but I can't imagine how anyone else would have really pulled that off either. I think that Rebecca Ferguson, though, was severely underused. I think all the characters underwritten, but Rebecca Ferguson was one of the things that I really didn't like about the movie, not because I think she's bad, but because she's such a non-character that it kind of drove me nuts.
Yeah, I read this book this summer, and just because people kept being like, oh, if you like Gone Girl, then you should read Girl on a Train. And, okay, like, they have some very base things in common because they're both crime stories that look at the same crime from different perspectives. So
with
it's a little
girl
rotten,
in
like.
The title.
They do both have girl in the title, accurate. And they sort of both deal with gender dynamics, but I would argue Gone Girl does it in a much more interesting way, and Girl on a Train, it's much more superficial. But the problem is that like Gone Girl, Girl on the Train is a book that is written from first-person perspective. So you have a lot of internal monologue that you have to figure out how to make visual in the film. And in Gone Girl, they managed to do it through the letters and through the clues and stuff like that. In the diary and all that kind of stuff. They don't have a device like that in this. So instead, the women just have tons and tons and tons of opportunities to monologue, whether it makes any damn sense. Whether they're drunk, whether in an AA meeting or therapy or just talking out loud for no apparent reason. And I found that really frustrating. I also got very frustrated because the characters in the book, like, it's not a great book to begin with. It's smutty and it's kind of tawdry and whatever, and it's fine. But, like, it's at least recognizes that it's smutty, where the movie, like, doesn't want to treat itself like it's smutty, and it's trying so hard to be like, we're the next Gone Girl, that when they do some more ludicrous things, yeah, it's such a break in tone that it's completely ridiculous. And I want to point out there's way more nudity in this movie than ever is suggested in the book, which is really bizarre. But I get it, because they're trying to, like, Angie's right, they're trying to go for, like, the boy next door thing and be like, ooh, sexy.
Is there a lot of nudity in this movie? I don't remember.
There's, like, that whole scene where she runs out of the bathtub. That's not in the book.
Well, there's that, and there's also a shower scene that's pretty graphic.
There's, like, two shower scenes, and then there's, like, a bunch of scenes. Like, Hailee Bennett has all the sex scenes in this movie. Am I wrong?
I feel like she winds up with that kind of stuff in most movies, where she's just always, like, the one in the sex scenes or the one running around naked.
I just feel like
she's a young ingenue, so.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a movie about these three very different women who fit into these negative stereotypes of, like, nagging wife and, like, you know, I don't want to say what Hailee Bennett's is because I feel like that's a spoiler.
I don't think Rebecca Ferguson's character is a nag. She doesn't nag at all. She doesn't
have
any personality.
In the book, she totally is. So in the movie, for them not to pin that down is another fault of the movie.
But in the movie, I've only seen the movie and I didn't see her as nagging wife. I thought it was kind of just like a, okay, no, actually, I was going to say it and then you're right. I don't want to get into spoilers.
No, yeah, it's a thing. I don't think that they translated the film, the movie very well. But then on top of that, I think that the characters are so thinly chiseled in this. And I think the casting is atrocious because in the book, Rachel is a disaster of a human being. She's the kind of person that if you looked at on the train, you'd be like, I'm going to get in a different car because she seems like a lot to deal with. But then they cast Emily Blunt, who even if you put bags under her eyes and don't put a lot of makeup on her, is still super gorgeous. So there's one scene where a man yells in her face like, you think I'd ever be attracted to someone like you? And people in our theater started laughing because of fucking course you would. Give me a break.
Oh, I strongly disagree with that. I actually think she did an exceptional job making herself so unappealing in this movie. I mean, the look on her face the entire time, she had some serious bags under her eyes, and it's just like her face looked like dead to me, and not dead in a way where I didn't think she was like emoting or performing. It's just like I could see the alcohol abuse had kind of like sucked the life out of her and made her so incredibly unhinged. I was almost I found her performance so real to me, but it was almost just What?
Like, every woman in this movie is the same body type. It makes sense that two of the leading characters are similar looking because that's a plot point. But, like, even the cop, even Lisa Kudrow, these are all incredibly slender Hollywood women that they put into this role. And I think it undercuts the value of the storytelling. And then the two guys they cast to play handsome husbands, meh. Like, I get they're good looking. They're not hot. So, like, there's, like, one point where you're supposed to be all leery over Luke Evans. I'm like, ugh, yawn. No, thank you.
Oh, I guess we just have very different taste in men. Because I thought he was insanely hot in this. And I also thought he did a really good job in that role. And, you know, it goes back to why I kind of liked Rebecca Ferguson's character and how they portrayed her. It's, you know, without spoiling anything, you can fit particular characters in this movie into certain stereotypes, but I kind of didn't know where she fell in terms of this whole situation, and it kept me guessing up until her very last decision in the movie, which is a big decision.
This is a good segue. Maybe we should talk about that ending, because, I mean, in case you haven't heard, this is a movie with a lot of twists and turns, and there's a lot we can't talk about unless we are just diving into spoilers. You guys ready?
Sure. All right. We want to say whether we think people should see it before we go into spoilers or just tell them to skip to the end?
I'm going to guess that Christy thinks don't see it. Perry thinks maybe see it. And I'm like, yeah.
Okay. Sure. Spoilers.
All right. So.
And go.
I thought you wanted to talk about Rebecca Ferguson at the end. Okay, actually, I'll talk about it.
Oh, okay.
So basically, I was talking about how she's a non-character, and the thing about the ending that really super doesn't work for me is that at the end, she... So at the end, you find out that, like, so Emily Blunt thinks that she might have killed Hayley Bennett's character, and she's not sure, but then at the end, she figures out that Justin Theroux actually did it because he's been gaslighting her, like, during their entire marriage and making her think that she's a horrible person, which she's not. And now he's married to Rebecca Ferguson. And so then Justin Theroux and Emily Blunt have a confrontation, and Rebecca Ferguson, and it's turning like literally deadly. Like she watches,
yeah, he's literally choking her out.
Like smash a glass over this woman's head so that she's knocked unconscious. She watches him try to strangle her. She watches her try to like stab him. And through all of this, Rebecca Ferguson is just kind of standing there watching.
Like,
and
Perry,
you said that you kind of liked that she kept you guessing, but like that was a part to me where I was just like, where I realized just how little there is to her character, and it drove me nuts.
I looked at that as a helpless woman trying to protect an infant. I mean, if she had,
doesn't look helpless, the infant goes away pretty quickly.
You also have a really threatening scene where Justin Theroux grabs the baby and then holds the, like, even just him holding the baby's hand freaked me out to no end, where I could totally understand her feeling the need to play along and not help Emily Blunt if it meant the safety of her child.
No, I'm not saying that she should have helped Emily Blunt. I'm saying if I had gotten that baby back, I would have, like, hightailed it out of there. And then it's weird to me that the movie doesn't set up any reason why she can't leave. Because, I mean, maybe if he had, like, threatened her, like, you know, like, made an explicit threat against her, or, like, you know, they established that the doors are locked or something, but they don't. So it kind of just looks like after she took the baby away, she put it to bed and then waited upstairs to, I'll just see how this whole thing shakes out. I'm not going to call 911 because she's upstairs where they have a phone. It's established that there's one right next to her bedroom, but like she doesn't do anything, which to me is such a weird choice. And I think the movie is full of things like that, where like the characters all kind of act in ways that make sense for the plot, less so than I think necessarily make sense for them as characters. Like Hayley Bennett has just like a lot of like, so she's like kind of the slutty archetype because she, I don't know, had some trauma when she was younger, so now she has to sleep with everyone or something. I don't know what the movie was really trying to do there. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, like, I still kind of enjoyed it in the end because, like, you know, I was like, well, it's a twisty, turny thriller. I want to see where this goes. I want to see what the next plot twist is. I wasn't, like, bored. You know, I was like, okay, that was, like, a reasonably good time, but I don't think that there's that much depth there. And I think that the more I think about this movie, the more it falls apart. I wouldn't say don't watch it. I'm just saying, you know, like, go in knowing that it's nothing more than just, like, lots of twists and turns.
The movie definitely thinks it's deeper than it really is, but I enjoyed it well enough, and the Gone Girl comparisons are very fair, because given the themes of the movie and even the look of the movie, it is very clear that it is trying to be that in every which way. One of the biggest plot holes that really bothered me was with Laura Prepon's character, her friend, how she's just like, I'm gonna kick you out of my apartment. And then she ups and leaves,
she
and
vanishes.
Emily Blunt is still living in the apartment.
Did that it bother really you at all that Luke Evans knows where Rachel lives all of a sudden? Like, she lives in a totally different town, and he just shows up at her door.
It crossed my mind.
Anyway, but the book was fine. The movie's crap. It's the kind of thing that if you were, like, half watching while you were doing dishes, you might like, because you might assume that you missed parts that, like, would have made it make sense, but it's just not going to make sense. Perry's actually right, though, about the Anna character in the end. That's what you're supposed to get from it, but a lot of people we saw with were complaining about the exact thing Angie was, so I feel like this is something that's splitting people right down the middle, and I gotta say, I'm kind of excited, because when I put up my review, which is a rotten review on Rotten Tomatoes, it was just enough to tip it to rotten, and I felt weirdly justified in that. It's just, this could have been so much more interesting and better. You could have done something rich with this. And I'm disappointed because I like Tate Taylor. I enjoyed The Help. And the writer, Erin Cressida Wilson, she wrote The Secretary, which I loved that movie. That was a really great adaptation. So they both have good adaptations behind them. They have a strong cast. But what this is fucking piss poor Lifetime.
Dude, you have listeners, you have a buffet of choices for who you want to listen to. You can listen to Christy, who hates it, Perry, who liked it quite a lot, or me, who was just like, it was fine. It was in the middle.
It was definitely a movie.
Yeah.
Well, we can all agree on that. And so with that, That is a wrap on episode 134 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You guys know what to do. Please go on over to iTunes where you can rate, subscribe, and comment. That would be super helpful. Please go and do that. Please like us on Facebook as well. We're also on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com, and then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, do you want to take it first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
You can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KristyPuchko. And I write all over the web. You can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
And you can catch my writing on Collider.com, a face on the Collider Videos YouTube channel, Twitter and Instagram at PNemroff. And that's all we got for you this week. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Just tell me what happened that night.